Wondering if any of you tonight know your history well enough to tell us what the most famous ship is in Canadian history. Now, I've gathered over the years that Canadian history isn't one of the most important things in American curriculum. Us Canadians probably know more about your history than what you know about ours, and that's okay. That's okay. That's just how it is. But the most famous ship in Canadian history is found on the front of our little dime, our little 10-cent piece. It's Marvin, do you know what it is? You know what ship that is? He remembers seeing it. Yes, because we go to Sunday school and we always called this a boat money. We would take our boat money to Sunday school, and it was our dime, and it has a tall ship on it, and this tall ship is the Blue Nose. Blue Nose was a tall ship sailboat that was launched in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, back in 1921. And she was called the Queen of the North Atlantic. She was both a fishing and a racing vessel. She is 143 feet long. Her mast was 126 feet tall, and she carried over 10,000 square feet of sail. She would fish the North Atlantic in the fishing season, which stretched from April to September. Schooners would often stay out for at least 8 weeks at a time, or at least until their holds were full of fish before they returned back in. The Blue Nose was also a very successful racing vessel. Other ships were built to try and beat her, but she won the trophy for being the fastest fishing schooner that worked the North Atlantic. In 1942, she was sold to the West Indies Trading Company to work as a freighter down in the Caribbean Sea. On January 28, 1946, she struck a coral reef off the coast of Haiti and sank. So that is the history of the ship that's on the Canadian dime. This evening we want to talk about another ship. It's not a tall ship, it's not a cruise ship, it's not a container ship, but it's a relationship. And the title for our message tonight is Biblical Tips for Relationships. Relationships are an inevitable part of our lives. It doesn't matter what stage in life you are at. It involves interaction with other people. A relationship is basically a connection between two or more things. We enjoy good relationships. We deal with strained and stressed and broken relationships at times. We all know that it takes time, it takes effort to build and nurture our relationships, and some take more effort than others. There's various levels of relationships. Some are distant, some are casual. Others are more deep and intimate. We have business relationships, family relationships, church relationships. And tonight we want to discover what is needed to build the relationships in our lives and also become more aware of the potential threats that are there to break down and destroy our relationships with each other. You know, we become discouraged, we become depressed when there's relationship problems in our lives. It can be parents and teenagers. There can be stresses in relationships there. It can be husbands and wives, where there's also the potential for there to be stress and relationships aren't what they should be. We know how it feels to come to church when there's dysfunctional relationships with our brothers and sisters. You know, many times people withdraw from each other when there's dysfunction or disagreement. And because of the strain and the pain, it also affects their physical and emotional and spiritual health. So I think it's important tonight that we talk about this and we make sure that each one of us is doing what we can to have healthy relationships, because that's God's will, that's God's desire for his people. And he's given us the tools to be able to have it that way. Tonight, often the cause for dysfunctional relationships, and I'm not going to say, well, often the cause, most times the cause for dysfunctional relationships is because our relationship with God is not in the condition it should be. Now, I understand that in relationships it involves two people, and sometimes it's one side's fault, but many times there's things that both sides can do to help build and fix and repair the relationship. So let's turn to Galatians chapter 5, and I'd like to read some verses here. Galatians chapter 5, there's some very good advice here. God is our creator, like we heard tonight. He's also a relationship specialist. I believe he's the best counselor that there ever will be. He's written the best manual that's on the market when it comes to relationships. So Galatians chapter 5, and starting to read at verse 13. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murderers, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. Now, we have a drawing on the board here tonight that I would like to just turn around, and we want to use this as we go through this message. Can everybody see that okay? I think I've had the board maybe tilted a little far that way. Can you see it back there? Can you see if the ladies can see it okay? All right, and we want to use a sailing ship as an illustration to help us learn what loving relationships look like and how to build and how to maintain them. Like I said before, these ships were they sailed all over the world. The continent that we're living on here was probably the explorers that discovered it were brought on a sailing ship, kind of a vessel like that. They were the Deltas, they were the American Airlines, they were the Air Canadas of yesteryear. A clipper could sail from New York to Liverpool in about 6 weeks if the weather was good. If the weather was clear and they had good winds, they could get across the Atlantic in about 6 weeks. It was 14 weeks. It could take up to 14 weeks if the weather was adverse. So you had to put quite a bit of flexibility into your travel plans back in those days. A sailing ship has 8 essential parts, and these parts are necessary for its function and operation. And I'd like to compare these to 8 necessary components that need to be part of our relationships. The first one, to have loving relationships that impact our lives for time and eternity, the love of God must be the law. The love of God must be the law. It says there in verse 13 and 14, by love serve one another. thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And I'd like to compare this to the mast of the sailing ship. So we're going to write love of God. And the mast is the main pole here that extends up above the deck. So we'll just put on here love of God. Must be the law. We'll just write love of God on there. But that has to be the basis. That has to be the central figure. That has to be at the center of any successful relationship. If you don't have that, we might as well go home, because we don't have anything that's going to work long term. We don't have anything that's really going to last. Definitely don't have anything that God can bless. Notice the mast is vertical. It points towards the sky. And it's obvious that a sailing ship's mast is critical to its service. Like I said before, the Blue Nose mast was 126 feet tall. That took quite a timber to make that mast. Usually they selected timbers, all one timber, to make that mast. So it took some selection to find it. Apparently the tallest single mast yacht in the world is 247 feet tall. And I believe that would probably be an aluminum or a fiberglass pole that they would use for that. Imagine climbing that mast to fix a rope or fasten a rope up there over 100 feet above the deck in a pitching sea. That would have been quite a challenge. The mast is what identified the ship for miles out. You could tell what ship it was. Ships were identified by their masts. And I just a little side note here. I believe God's people need to be known. They need to be identified by their love for each other. That is ultimately what is going to draw the world to God, is the way his people love each other. A broken mast meant a drifting ship. A drifting ship results in shipwreck. It results in a ship that doesn't reach its destination. Tonight, the question for each one of us is, what is the condition of your mast? Is it broken? Is it weak? Is it cracked? Are you having relationships that are not loving, that are strained, that are broken? I know you can't fix the other person's mast. And that's not necessarily our first responsibility. Our first responsibility is to check our own and make sure it's what it ought to be. We can never have loving relationships like we ought if we're not connected to God's love. And I'd like to turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 48, because it gives us a very good description of how God's love looks in shoe leather, how it looks in everyday life. It's not just some sort of a lofty concept, but it gets right down into the roots. It gets right down into shoe leather. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 48, we can probably rattle this off by memory, but I think it's good if we read it and rediscover how practical it actually is. Starting to read at verse 4. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself. It doesn't brag on itself. It's not puffed up. It's not arrogant. It doth not behave itself unseemly or rudely. Seeketh not her own. Is not easily provoked. Thinketh no evil. Doesn't keep an account. Doesn't keep a list of what everybody's wronged me about or wronged me with. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. That's what we're talking about here. And unless our mast is connected into that kind of a source, into that kind of love, our relationships, we're going to have a lot of trouble. We're going to have a lot of trouble. You know, God's love is a love that finds its greatest satisfaction in serving. It's one of the attributes of God's love. God so loved that he gave. He gave. You know, self-love controls. That's one of the ingredients of self-love, because self is at the center of it. It controls, it criticizes, it competes. That's what self-love does. God's love doesn't do that. That's what we read here. So if you have some relationships that need some reconnecting tonight, try serving the other person. Try serving them. You'll be surprised what it does. Try taking as good a care of them as you do of yourself. Try pampering them like you do yourself. Start protecting them like you do yourself. It will work. I guarantee you it will. But your mast is going to need to be connected to God's love. The mast is your relationship with God. That's first and foremost. And if that is straight, if that is in good repair, that will be the key to all your other connections. Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." We didn't come pre-programmed, though, with that. And I'm here to be the first to admit to you tonight that my record has a lot of things that I wish that I could change, a lot of things I wish I could redo. But, you know, we can always go from here. We can always start from here. All right, loving relationships, number two, need to be led by the Holy Spirit, not a haughty spirit. Verses 16 to 18 says, "Walk in the Spirit and be led of the Spirit." So, led of the Spirit. And that's number two, that's the main sail. Led of the Spirit. You know, we need the Holy Spirit to manage our spirit. We can't manage our spirit on our own strength. We need the Holy Spirit to do that. Your spirit is your attitude. And your attitudes control your choices. And like we talked about the other night, your choices control, they determine your destination. And I'd like to compare that to the mainsail of the ship. The mainsail is got the number two on it. It's just behind the mast there. That's the mainsail. The mainsail harnesses the wind and it drives the ship 200 feet up in the breeze. There's actually a tall ship today that is a cruise ship. It's part of a collection of ships that are cruise ships, but it's called the Royal Clipper. And it has five masts. And I believe you could, I'm not sure if that one does transatlantic crossings or not. I know some in the group do. But the Royal Clipper has five masts. It can carry 227 passengers, 106 crew, 200-foot high masts, 56,000 square feet of sail, size of a warehouse that's 100 feet wide and 560 feet long. That's how much fabric, that's how much sail the Royal Clipper carries. Now the mast and the mainsail are very interconnected and you can't separate those two. And that's how it is in our lives, in our relationships. We need the love of God and we need the Spirit of God controlling our attitudes, our spirit, in order to have healthy, beautiful relationships. When it's not that way, it produces strained and stressed and separated relationships. Do an assessment of your life. Do an assessment of your attitude. Think about your responses, your attitude toward your parents, your peers, your brothers and your sisters, the leadership in your life, in your church. Do you have a selfish spirit that's driving your ship? Do you have a superior attitude? You know, kind of a snooty attitude. Oh, may God help us. I don't like that when I see that in others, but I'm afraid maybe too often they see that in me. You know, just kind of aloof, just kind of, I got life together and I'm the
I'm the measuring stick for everybody else. What's your response when the authority in your life is asking something that you don't agree with and it crosses your will? That's the test for all of us. We all get faced with that test, no matter what department we are in life. If the mainmast is self-love and the mainsail is a self-centered attitude, then your relationships are going to be full of conflict. You can be sure of that. How is it in your marriage? Is there tension and conflict? Check your mast, check your sail. Verse 15 talks about biting and devouring one another. That's too bad when that happens in our relationships. You know, things that bite, we tend to kind of stay away. We don't really want to have anything to do with something that bites. You know, a dog that bites. We had a dog that he bit someone once and we had to put him down. Nobody trusted him. People that bite are people that we usually kind of stay away from. But let's make sure we don't bite. Tear each other down, tear others apart. That's not God's will. Bites hurt, they sting, they immobilize, and they kill. How often do we consume our time and our resources by biting instead of building up? You know, we do it with our attitudes, we do it with our words. Sometimes it's even in the words we don't say. You ever use a silent treatment on someone? Come to church and not talk to them for weeks, just kind of take the other way out and just avoid each other. That happens. And we don't fool anybody when that kind of thing goes on. Everybody knows it. We do it. May God help us not to bite and devour with our words, and even the words we don't say. When the Holy Spirit is in charge of your spirit, look at what he's going to bring to your relationships. Verse 22, it says it very clearly. There you have it. There you have it. When he's in charge, when he is the manager of the mainsail, when he's the manager of your attitude and your spirit, look at what it produces. We all like those words. That's all what we want to be. It's the treatment we want to receive, but we need help. We need help to give it. We need help to live it out, don't we? All right, loving relationships thrive. Number three, when we learn to listen objectively. Now, I would like to go down to verse 20 here. And we have the works of the flesh. Verse 19 talks about the works of the flesh to do with purity and things like that. And then, or verse 19. And then verse 20 has to do more with our attitudes and with our spirit. And these things are, of course, the things in verse 19 affect our relationships as well. But verse 20 is what we want to zero in on here. We have the word variance. And the word variance means a quarrel or a debate, to wrangle and argue persistently and to squabble. That's what that means. And when the spirit of variance is part of our relationships, it will wreck them. That's what it will do. So point number three is learn to listen objectively. So we're just going to put here on number three, learn to listen. Learn to listen objectively. You know, you can listen and not really listen. When you listen objectively, you're listening to learn and to try and understand where the other person is coming from. And we want to compare that to the rudder. And the rudder is the little piece that's on the bottom of the ship. And it steers the ship. It tells it what direction to go. This ship would probably, who knows, if it didn't have a rudder, a ship that was going from New York to Liverpool, I don't know, it might have ended up down in South Africa if it had no rudder. I mean, there would be no direction. Learn to listen objectively. That the rudder's that little flap down there. It's under the water at the back of the boat, and it just quietly does its thing. The rudder simply listens to the direction that the tiller gives it. Now, the spirit of variance, like I said before, it likes to argue, it likes to debate in an effort to exert its influence and control. And people can be that way. Perhaps some more than others. Maybe it's a personality thing, but they just like to debate or argue for the sake of arguing. Now, I'm not opposed to a good debate if it's a healthy debate and if the qualities of verse 22 are part of it. But so often debates, they go from bad to worse. There used to be these discussions around about the flat earth theory. I don't know if you ever heard of that or not down here. But to me, that discussion was more about just debating something that nobody was even sure about. It really, I'm not sure if it mattered, and yet I think it did, because I really think the basis for that debate is possibly rooted in questioning fundamental, I'm not sure how to word it, but you know what I mean. Questioning established fact, I guess I would say. So often that's the root of it. That's the spirit of it. I'm not saying it always is. But we're talking here about variance, just debating and arguing and squabbling. And it's not so much maybe about what is right or wrong, but about who is right or wrong and who can argue the best, and whoever can argue the best is on top somehow. But those kind of things, they wreck relationships. They really do. When you have that spirit involved. Now, listening is a skill. And it takes practice and it takes wisdom to learn how to listen. And probably that's been one of my biggest challenges. I find talking maybe easier than some people do, but usually the people that find talking easy find listening harder. But in our relationships, we need to listen to each other. Of course, not everybody can listen all the time. There needs to be somebody that communicates as well, but listening is part of communicating. When we listen with wandering eyes, you ever get in a conversation with somebody and you're talking and all of a sudden they're looking over there while you're talking and it's like, boy, I must sure be important. Or I do that to people. I hope I never do that to any of you. But sometimes we zone out. And when we do that, we're communicating something. And I think we need to be aware of that. What we're saying is, the person that we're communicating with is not as important as what, I'm thinking about. So be careful with that. Here's some tips for effective listening. Eye contact is very important when you're listening. Make eye contact with the person that is talking to you. Listen to non-verbal cues. That's why communication, face-to-face communication, is so important. Over the years, I've become more and more wary of email and electronic communication, especially when it comes to critical, sensitive issues. We need to discuss them face-to-face. Because listening, so much of it is part of the non-verbal cues. Don't interrupt. Sometimes certain personalities take more time to express what they're thinking. Don't judge or jump to conclusions. Don't start planning to say what to say next. Don't impose opinions or solutions. Rather, ask questions. Take an interest and ask questions. Just some effective listening tips. Many, many times the best way for someone else to consider your viewpoint happens when you listen to theirs. It's just the way it works. Truth must always be the bottom line, and probably we'll talk about that a little later, but listening is so important. When Colleen and I were dating, we ran across this little saying that said, if you don't understand my silence, you won't understand my words. So, of course, in our dating years, and
those of you who have dated know that there's times when, you know, you don't always know what to talk about. And sometimes it takes a while just to be comfortable with that. You know, you don't have to always be talking. Not if the silence is amiable. If it's being used as a control tactic, that's a different story. We talked about that already. But learn to understand your silence. Learn to understand even how a person feels, even if they're not speaking. You know, your relationships and the direction they will go depend on how well you can listen. James 1, verse 9, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. All right, loving relationships are built and maintained when there is liaison instead of competition. Liaison instead of competition. And verse 20 here has another word that I'd like to look at, and it's the word emulations. Emulations. And you know what emulations means? It means to compete with. Now, the word liaison means connection and cooperation. So, it has the idea of exchange of information or the planning of joint efforts by two or more people or groups. It's often a military term. The Allied forces in World War II were a liaison. They worked together. So, liaison instead of competition is important in our relationships. And I'd like to think about that as the jib on the sailboat. The jib is this little sail here on the front. I'll just write liaison there. Liaison instead of competition. And that's a pretty important sail on a sailboat. It works in concert with the mainsail. And it helps to increase the stability and the performance of the boat. If you didn't have a jib, it would be much more zigzaggy back and forth. It wouldn't have the stability that it has when there's a jib there. But the jib does not compete with the mainsail. It doesn't say, well, I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to take my own way and totally contradict what the mainsail is doing. Rather, it works in concert with. It works together. Larger sailing vessels have more than one jib. They'll often have a few jibs. Now, the word emulate, it means to seek to match or rival another's achievement or performance. And when this happens in our relationships, it breaks them down when we try to start competing with each other. We need to learn to see each other's gifts and strengths as a complement to our lives and not a curse. And in our pride, that's kind of hard to do, isn't it? But if by God's grace we can do that, our relationships are so much better. You know, when we enter the competition race with each other, we tear down what God has designed to actually be a blessing and a benefit in our lives. And I'm thankful that for the people that God has placed in my life to complement my weakness. Competition is something that's rooted in pride, and when we get caught in that crosswind, it takes us off course. When we secretly try to match or rival our friends or even our spouse's achievements or performance, we damage the potential to develop what God has actually given to us. I believe God puts people in our lives to make us better, to help even develop what He's given to us. I believe He has. He does that. I'm just so amazed at how my wife's strengths complement my weaknesses. And that's a wonderful thing, the way that God puts lives together like that. You know, even the animal kingdom complements each other. What do you call them down here, zebras or zebras? Zebras? Okay. We call them zebras in Canada. They're zebras down here. But zebras and ostriches are both prey for faster animals. As such, they both have to maintain a heightened sense of alertness for danger. The problem is that zebras, while they have excellent eyesight, really don't have a very good sense of smell. Ostriches, on the other hand, have a great sense of smell, but not so great eyesight. So these two smart species stay close together, relying on the eyes of the zebra and the noses of the ostrich to keep predators at bay. And I thought that was interesting. So I've never been to the safari, but apparently you'll see those two species very often. They'll be together, and that's because they need the other's strength to complement their weakness. And I thought, well, if only we could see it that way sometimes. All right, number five, loving relationships are built when we have level-headed and logical emotions. And I'd like to just pull this out of verse 20 here again. We have the word wrath. And wrath has the idea, has the definition here of passionate anger. It means breathing hard. It means fierce. The picture of blowing smoke, just like you see when an artist draws an angry bull. How do you know the bull is angry when the artist draws it? Well, by the puffs of steam that are coming out of his nostrils. You know that's an angry bull. And that's what this word wrath is. That's the picture that it has. Loving relationships are destroyed where there's an anger problem. And I'd like to compare level-headed and logical emotions to the keel on a sailing ship. So the keel is number five, and it's right down here at the bottom. I'll just put here level-headed. A sailboat without a keel would capsize from the pressure of the wind on the sail. The keel is a very critical part of the boat. It's down there at the bottom. It's on the bottom of the hull. I believe back in yesteryear, they would fill the keel with rocks. I think modern sailboats, they actually take on water. They use water as the ballast down in the keel. But the keel is critical for the sailboat to function. And I think level-headed and logical emotions are also needed to maintain loving relationships. Level-headed has the idea of calm and sensible, remaining rational and fully in control in difficult situations or emergencies. And logical has the idea of being sensible and based on facts, able to think sensibly and to come to rational conclusions based on facts rather than on emotions. There was a firefighter in our neighborhood back some years ago, and I'm not sure how he even got on to the volunteer fire brigade, but he was not a man that was known for logical and level-headed emotions, and he didn't last very long. He would get in the truck, and he was more of a threat to safety on the way to the fire than probably what they even faced at the fire. He just kind of lost it, and he didn't last very long. But tonight, we need to have level-headed, logical emotions that are based on facts. Wrath is anger that has turned to rage. It's a little like when King Nebuchadnezzar, there in that account with those Hebrew boys, it says that when they didn't bow to him and they didn't do what he wanted, it says his visage was changed. And I believe that was like a switch that flipped, and he couldn't even think logically anymore. And that can happen to people. Anger, wrath has wrecked many a relationship. And it can be in marriage, it can be in the home, it can be at work. There's just, in every relationship, I believe it's a threat, and it's something that we need God's help. I believe that when anger is present, it's often rooted in what we think of as this person is not meeting a need in my life that I think they should be meeting. They're not giving me what I deserve, and so I get frustrated and I get angry. And often that's directed towards people, and ultimately it's directed towards God. You will find in many cases that people that have anger problems, the bottom line is God didn't give them what they thought they deserved. And when that's in our lives, when that's a root that's in our lives, it will cause conflict in our relationship. The keel is like the facts. It's the truth. It is what has weight. Down there under the water, not making a sound, not flapping in the wind, just providing balance and stability. And our relationships tonight need to be based on the facts. They need to be based on truth, not on feelings, or they will capsize. We need the keel, the truth, at the base of our lives. We need the Spirit to propel our lives. We need both. You need both. And you emphasize one above the other, and your relationships will capsize and drift apart. Run your life, run your relationships on feelings, and they're going to be up and down just like the waves. You know, I don't always feel that God loves me. Do you always feel that? Depending what comes along in life, or you can just, you know, if you go by feelings, they can be up and down. They really can be. And it can be that way in our relationships. And we can start to look at each other suspiciously if someone doesn't quite say something right or looks at us a little wrong. So often that's based in feelings, not based in the facts. Learn to sail your relationships on faith in the facts, and they will be much smoother. All right, number 6, loving relationships that are built on God's love need a long-suffering peacemaker. A long-suffering peacemaker, number 6. And that is the tiller. Long-suffering is part of the fruit of the Spirit. Long-suffering peacemaker. The tiller is this little lever here, and it's what controls the rudder. And that is controlled by the captain, I guess, by the sailor. We have the word strife here in verse 20. And the word strife means conflict, it means contention, it means friction. We all know what happens when there's friction. Friction always makes heat, doesn't it? Where there's friction, there's heat. And where there's heat, too long, things fly apart. Simply, that's how it works. Proverbs 13 verse 10 says, "Only by pride cometh contention." Only by pride cometh contention. So there it tells us what the root cause of the contention is. Stubborn insistence on my own way causes friction. Strife comes when there is a clash of the wills. Now, this cannot always be avoided. I understand that. There are times when there is a difference in thinking and the basis for it is right and wrong. I get that. But so often it's not necessarily that black and white in our relationships. It's more of a clash of the wills. It's more of a pride problem. I'd like to, like I said, compare that to the tiller on the boat. The tiller is what controls the rudder. Remember, the rudder controls the direction. It's down there under the water, but it takes its direction from the tiller. And it's important that the tiller is managed by someone who is long-suffering. A long-suffering person is patient, they're forbearing, they're enduring in difficulty. You know, the opposite of long-suffering is reactive and intolerant. And look at verse 22 again. There you have the fruits of the Spirit, and you see long-suffering is one of those fruits. It exhibits patience. How about you and your relationship with others? Can you show patience? Can you be long-suffering with a friend who's maybe needing to mature They're maybe not quite at the same level of understanding where you're at.
You got some long suffering for them. Maybe their response was childish or mean. You know, sometimes strife and conflict and friction comes because of fear in the other person's life. Maybe it's fear of failure. Maybe it's fear of exposure. Maybe it's fear to let go. Tonight we must always learn to look at what is right, not who is right. It's always got to be what is right. The who has to stay out of it. You know, it can be with young people. Maybe there's friction in your relationship with your parents. You want a new phone. It's time for a new phone. Everybody else got a new phone. But Dad won't budge. He says, no, the one you got, it's fine yet for a while. And the harder you push, the more planted his feet become. And, oh, yeah. Dads need deep roots, don't they? If you're in that situation, I would just give you this advice, whether it's a youth or whoever you are. You know, if you be patient and your parents can sense that there's patience and there's long-suffering there, that's probably one of the quickest ways to change their minds. And as parents, we need to be reasonable as well. There needs to be reasonableness, too, in our relationships. I don't have this in my note, but sometimes dads get into this rut that they're going to show who's boss. That kind of a spirit is going to cause reaction in our young people. They know who's in charge, if we are in charge the way Christ wants us to be. We don't need to prove that to them. We need to be consistent, and we need God's help to be that. Relationships need a lot of patience. Some people take years to change. Some never do. Be willing to lay down your opinion, your feelings, for the sake of peace. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." One of the marks of God's children. All right, number 7, strong, healthy relationships must be built where there is loyal commitment to unity. And we want to compare that to the whole. The whole is number 7. Loyal commitment. That's the whole. That's what holds it all together. We have the word here. In verse 20 again, we're getting through this verse, but there's a lot of words here, and they're pretty practical words. We have the word seditions. And seditions are the opposite of loyal commitment to unity. You notice most of these points, I guess all of them, are positive points. And they're the opposite of the negative that we're seeing here in this verse. But seditions has the idea of disunion and dissension and division. It has the idea of an uprising. That is what the literal interpretation of the Greek word is. And heresy, also uses heresy here, heresies. Heresy means a party, a sect, an opinion or belief that contradicts established teaching. That's what that word means. And the mentality is basically, again, very, very me-centered in all of these definitions. It's about living a life that expresses who I am and what I believe. In fact, I will choose to be different because of the attention, whether it's positive or negative, that I receive. And this kind of unconventional thinking and spirit is a relationship killer every time. It will kill relationships because its focus is singular. Its focus is me-centered. And relationships are not singular. They're plural. They involve other people. You know, the hull of a sailboat is what holds it together. You get a hole in that hull, and that whole ship is going to go one direction, and that is down. Unless you get it repaired, unless you get the water pumped out, unless you get it fixed, it's going down. And there's various threats to a vessel's hull, just like there are to loyal commitment in our relationships. There's a lot of threats out there. For a ship, it can be shallow water. It can be rocks. the lake where we used to do a lot of fishing. Nice big lake, had some islands in it. But over on the one side, close to the one island, there was a big rock. And some years you could see just the top of that rock, and other years it was submersed in water. The water level was a little higher, you couldn't see the rock. And they used to always warn us, remember the big rock, because if you hit that rock, there's probably no more fishing. I mean, it was going to wreck your boat. Rocks of rebellion. Who are you to tell me what to do? Those kind of things will rip a relationship apart. Shallow commitment. As long as you meet my needs, we can get along. That's a one-way street. Relationships about meeting the needs of each other. It's not just about my needs. It's not just about what I want. It's not just about what I think. We need to start getting concerned about what my brother's needs are and what he thinks and what his vision is. That there needs to be a back and forth. There's underwater mines planted by the enemy. Don't you dare try to correct me or be critical of how I do or think. Those kind of mentalities will make holes in the hull. Proverbs 27, verse 6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. You know, there must be a spirit within our relationships, within both parties, that we can freely share in honesty and openness out of love and concern and feel like each other's heard. And that takes some practice, I believe. I believe that takes some practice for that to happen. Our local paper had this little saying in it back years ago. They used to have this little saying in the paper. It was called the Weekly Wag. And there was one that stood out to me at the time because I was having some relationship struggles. And it said something like this: confronting an enemy takes courage, but confronting a friend takes even more. And I thought, that's very true. That's very true. All right, number 8, this is the last point. To maintain and build loving relationships, we need liberating forgiveness. Liberating forgiveness. And verse 21 talks about envyings. They're all important. And I guess probably the first two are most important, but probably this one is next to the first two. Liberating forgiveness. If you don't have this one, we won't have relationships. Envyings has the idea of jealousy and greed and resentment, and we talked about resentment and bitterness a little bit last night, but these attitudes are like a cancer, and they're going to destroy our relationships from inside out. David and Saul's relationship was an example of that. There was envying there, there was jealousy, and there was resentment. And look at what it did to Saul. Look at where it took him. Look at what the end of the road looked like. He ended up down in the witch's house. God wouldn't hear him anymore. That's where it ends up. It destroyed his life. It destroyed his sons' lives. I'd like to compare liberating forgiveness to the boom at the bottom of the sail. That's the main boom here, this piece right here. And that one overshadows all the sailors in the boat. And it's got to be the same way in our relationship. Our relationships need forgiveness to function. Forgiveness is not, the definition of forgiveness is really not that complicated. It simply means to abstain from giving. To abstain from giving. To abstain from giving the other person what you think they deserve because of what they've done to you. You know, life can bring many circumstances and situations. There's mistakes, there's hurt, there's pain. And we've all experienced it. But forgiveness liberates us from the bondage of giving to others what we think they deserve. Forgiveness liberates us from the need to return evil for evil or bite for bite. Forgiveness makes it possible to let go of resentment and let God take care of retribution. When forgiveness overshadows the sailors in a relationship, there's freedom to sail. There's freedom to sail to places that they've never been before. Forgiveness does not mean that we overlook or tolerate sin or disobedience, but rather it means that we don't let the hurt and resentment from the other sailor's sin bind us. It does not need to bind us. You can let it go. Tonight, is there a sailor? Is there a relationship? Is there someone in your life that you need to abstain from giving what you think they deserve? I encourage you tonight, forgive. Take off the ropes. Let it go. And both of you will experience liberty to sail. Jesus said that if you do not forgive, neither will your Father, which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. This is an eternal issue. Ephesians 4, verse 32 says, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you." Tonight, I'm thankful that our relationships don't need to be on the rocks. But as we have the components in place that we talked about tonight, if they're in place and they're in good repair, then we can sail on together and we can make it safely home. I'm sure that that's what each one wants here tonight. What condition is your relationship with God in tonight? Is it cracked or strained or broken? What about your relationships with your fellow sailors? Are they in good repair? Husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, employer, employee, neighbors. This is an eternal matter. One that affects our course in life. One that affects where we end up.